better put him in the Heisman.
Got that wood right here, baby.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer for those anytime easy drinking occasions.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed the dream season.
A baseball team that's on the way back. A College World Series title. The Bomb Stadium.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Boss after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
There's some bright news that came out yesterday. Andrew Marchand of the New York Post reported that, and it's since been confirmed by ESPN, that the timeline for The Last Dance, the 10-part documentary of the Michael Jordan's Bulls championship team, has been moved up to April from June. So I'm really excited about that because April's next month. So,
well, and this has been a long time coming. This is a great time to drop something you already had in the archive, kind of just waiting for the right time. They were probably timing it out around NBA playoff time and the right spot on the calendar. Well, everything about the calendar has changed, so this is something to look forward to. I noticed they rolled out, last weekend or sometime last week, rolled back out the OJ series. That was a 5-part documentary they did, and they ran it on ESPN. This gives them something to air and something that will draw ratings. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that this is something that they need right now to convince, just like everybody else, convince advertisers this is a good space to be in and people are going to watch it. This is something that's new, and there's very little in the world of sports that's on the air right now that's new. This is new programming that I think is compelling and people will watch.
Speaking of new programming, I don't know if you saw this, Tommy, but this is from Robert Lustich, who's not currently writing for a media outlet. He said, hearing Tiger and Phil Part 2 may indeed be happening as a pay-per-view event, but the caveat is each will have a partner. Two names being mentioned, Tom Brady and Peyton Manning. You think about the...
I didn't know Brady was a big golf guy.
I didn't either, but the only Brady golf scenario and clip I can think of is him in Entourage with him and Wahlberg, and that's it. I've never seen Brady and golf stuff, but you think about the ratings in a time period like this where we don't have sports right now. I don't know if this would be pay-per-view. I don't know how this would do it, but this would be something that so many people, regardless if you're a big golf fan, would love to watch. And well, you think about the money being thrown down on that, it would be substantial.
It was only, what, $9.99 the last time? It wasn't big money for the pay-per-view.
Yeah, and it ended up not working.
And it didn't. Yeah, they didn't. I mean, I think the money we spent on it got our money back because it didn't technically work. So I'm not sure how all of the finances and all that worked out from the last one. So this may be somewhat of a do-over from last time. But if you're going to involve some guys from sports, let's get some guys that are good at golf. Isn't Steph Curry like a scratch golfer?
Steph's pretty good.
Yeah.
So who would you, like on that note, who would you want to see?
Steph Curry would be one name, okay. And then Tony Romo would be the other. I mean, if I'm going to get sports guys out there, let's get some people that are famous, well-known, but let's get some guys that take golf serious and are good at golf.
So you don't want to see Charles Barkley?
He's the worst
his
ever.
His swing.
Now, Barkley would
swing.
Be fun, but he is the there's been several things done. There was a show that was on Golf Channel one time that... drawing a blank on it, but anyway, they do a school with somebody. They have different celebrities come in and do a 2 or 3 day school. They made a nice 30-minute show or whatever out of this. And it's one of Tiger's old. I'm drawing a blank on his name. One of Tiger's old instructors. And it was just fast. The one on Barkley was the best ever because he was the absolute worst golfer ever.
I love watching his swing. I think that would be highly entertaining. So this is what Phil Mickelson had to say. Someone asked him via Twitter, do you think there's a chance that you two go out and play around mic'd up again with one camera guy and just put it out there for stream to watch? We need live sports. And Phil replied, working on it. So it's definitely in the works. I don't know if it'll end up happening with everything that's going on, but that would be really cool in a time period where there's nothing to watch right now.
What does working on it mean, though?
I don't know. I mean, you have multiple reports about it. So. And I don't know if it's going to happen, but come on, Tommy. You got to at least get excited. But this is golf, man. I thought this is right up your alley.
Yeah, let's see. I mean, again, last time it didn't work. Last time it was, you know, the technical aspect of it didn't work, and it was a better match than I thought it would end up being. Phil won that thing, right? By stroke and extra holes?
Yeah, because you have that great Jake Owen story. I think we still have it in our archives, but you remember Jake Owen was at a wedding and a country singer. And he goes up to Phil And he was like, he was joking with Phil about, hey, the technical aspect. And he was like, you owe me, how much did it cost?
I think it was $9.99 is what it ended up being.
Yeah, and Jake Owen
either
goes,
either 9 or 19. It wasn't exorbitant.
He said, this is the one of the best quotes I've ever seen. And Jake goes up to him. He's like, hey, Phil, I paid for that. And you owe me money because it didn't work. And Phil hands him a $100 bill, and he says, I made $990 or whatever the amount was last year, or last day, or last week, or whatever. He said, take one of these and go yourself. Like, just the power and magnitude to be able to say that if you're Phil Mickelson. But I'd be interesting with the Peyton Manning and Tom Brady dynamic. Peyton's retired. You have Tom Brady with the biggest sports news as of late. Going to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, he's going to be preparing because we know how diligent he is when it comes to preparing for the NFL. That seemed odd to me that he would want to take time, especially at his age where you know time is precious when it comes to getting ready for this upcoming season, out of his normal work schedule to play this. But maybe the money's there, but definitely would be a matchup. I don't know about Brady's golf game, but you brought up two names in Steph Curry and Tony Romo that would definitely draw attention, not only just the entertainment aspect, but you'd actually see some good golf as well.
Right. That's what that's what, if I'm going to tune in, I mean, to me, does it matter if it's Brady and Manning? Is that going to make me tune in more than Steph Curry and Tony Romo? I just want to see good golf.
You don't want someone to shoot over 100.
Exactly. There may be some other athletes out there that are great golfers, too, that are scratch golfers. I mean, these guys are athletes. They got great hand-eye coordination. I don't imagine those two names I suggested are the only two golfers that could fit in this conversation. There may be others I'm not aware of. Mm-hmm. But if we're going to do this, let's put athletes out there that have household name presence, those two do, and can actually, I don't know, play golf.
877-377-6963 if you want to call or text in. Who would you want to see in this golf matchup? Rather, if it's just some athletes, would you want to see Phil and Tiger go out to them? Would you want to see additions to that? I think about with Michael Jordan, one of the things that was often talked about on the 1992 Dream Team documentaries and books written about it, is him and Chuck Daly would play like 36 holes of golf, and then he would play basketball later that night.
Right.
And that's what Karl Malone, that's what Charles Barkley, so many people were just shocked at how, and he would also gamble till like 4 and 5 in the morning. Like, he just,
that's how good he was.
He was just unbelievable at how many things he could do. And him and Chuck really bonded on the golf course. And why that's important to you as an Arkansas fan is because Chuck Daly is a massive mentor of yours truly, Eric Musselman. Not yours truly, not me, but Eric Musselman, your head basketball coach. I don't know how many times that Eric Musselman has referenced Chuck Daly this season, but he's definitely brought him up once or twice. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was a really cool story. And I'd love to see Michael involved somehow with this. I don't know if it will, but Tom Brady and Peyton Manning.
This seems beneath Michael Jordan.
It depends on how much money was involved.
Well, I mean, like, he needs money?
I don't know. Money talks sometimes. Everyone can always use another buck, Tommy, when it comes to that.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Try the new Bud Light Lemonade, a premium light lager brewed with real lemonade.
Now he does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're number 3, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hog!
Let's bring in Tom Murphy of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Tom, good morning, man. How are we on a Tuesday?
Hey, guys. I'm doing very well.
So, Tom, we brought up last segment the potential of Tiger and Phil round two, and there's indications that two other names might be involved, Tom Brady and Peyton Manning. Is there a golf matchup? Is there a golf pairing that you'd really like to see alongside with Phil Mickelson and Tiger Woods that you think would draw so much attention and be really good for kind of this dry period in sports right now?
Yeah, let's see. Rory McIlroy always makes for some interesting coffee, right? Doesn't he always have some drama going on in his life? So maybe you can match him up against somebody like Sergio, or I don't know if he's ever butted heads with anybody, but that makes a little bit of sense to me.
So the NCAA rolled out their change with the upcoming spring sports last night, Tom, and I know you've been paying attention to this. What did you think about the ruling, and did you see any problem, or did you think the NCAA did a good job with their ultimate decision?
Well, you know, it's a cottage industry to ridicule the NCAA for some of the decisions they make, how slowly they move. But I think in this case, they listened to the entire membership. And the schools, the smaller schools that were very concerned about mandating giving scholarships to seniors, they were listened to, as well as schools that can afford it. But here's what we're going to run into is these schools are going to be mashed because, from a financial standpoint, because of the lack of revenues that's created from the loss of the NCAA tournament. So I read a story that Pat Forty wrote, and he quoted Joe Castiglione, the AD at Oklahoma, and he says, the bottom line is that when the music stops, there's not going to be enough chairs to sit in. And so that means, scholarships. The coaches who are really expert at juggling their scholarship and being honest and real with their athletes – I'll have a better time here, but we're going to see a jump in the transfer portal. It's going to have a lot of collateral impact that you just don't know what it's going to mean yet. And, it's going to take us a few years to really bounce back probably from this. And the universities are going to have to be really judicious on how they do it. I think it's going to work out great in some instances. Some people who were in their last year of eligibility, the schools will want them back big time, and others, there's going to be this kind of almost like a tryout situation between, do we want a final year from a senior, or do we want an incoming freshman to come in and get these minutes, or this playing time? So I think they did a good job by not having a straight-up mandate. They let the schools kind of determine the percentage of scholarship or whatever. So I think good job overall in a tough circumstance.
Yeah, and baseball is the sport that it's going to, I don't say affect the most, but that we pay attention to the most here at Arkansas. Mm-hmm. Dave has always done a good job of managing that roster. He's been very willing to prune when needed, sending players down to JUCO or exiting them off of his roster. I really, and I may be wrong, I don't think he will be one that expands his roster far beyond what it currently is. How do you think Dave Van Horn will approach this ruling, and how will he manage his ball club in response to this?
Yeah, that's the take I have, Tommy, is that he's done such a good job over the years that I don't think this is going to be a huge, a huge stretch for him to put the puzzle together. And he even talked about that on our previous teleconference, in that he welcomed the idea of dealing with that. And so he's going to have that opportunity, and we're going to talk to him later today on a U of A teleconference. Asking those questions. And then, you have the additional situation of the MLB draft, and I'm sure you guys have touched on that too, and how that might be changed this year. So I just think that Dave Van Horn has positioned himself as, pretty uniquely situated to deal with something like this because of his past.
Yeah, and you mentioned the Major League Baseball draft. How do you think that ends up getting shaped? We've heard anything from a small draft with five rounds. That the one thing I think we do know is there's not going to be a 40-round draft.
Absolutely. I think they've capped it at the maximum of 10, but it's yet to be determined. But the MLB has decided they're going to have it. Now, the exact date, I think there was a June something date that is a little bit fluid right now, and then there's an end date that it won't be past July something. So the people like Heston Kerstad, who were, pretty much looked like a lock for the first round, I don't think it's going to impact him much. They're going to keep the same slot money as for the draft positions as they had last year. But there's like Casey Opitz. He could be anywhere. We think he's going to be a well-regarded draft pick, and maybe somewhere in that 5 to 10 range. Well, it depends on how many rounds they have as to whether he goes. So I think guys like Connor Nolan and like maybe Jacob Nesbitt, who in a regular draft year might have considered going, after whatever round they cut this off, you can sign, but the maximum is going to be $20,000 for an undrafted person. So I think that's going to help, keep a guy like Nesbitt here for sure. And then like Connor Nolan, if he doesn't get picked, he's draft eligible. But if he doesn't get picked, it would be a lot easier for him to return because he couldn't get more than $20,000.
Talking with Tom Murphy here on the Morning Rush. Tom, the SEC as of yesterday began video conferencing. How do you think it's going to impact the Arkansas football program this year and the fact that they can't go about their normal day-to-day routines as they would have last year?
Yeah, it's helpful, but I don't think they gave them near enough. I mean, 2 hours during a week doesn't amount to very much time per day. And so I've read some other instances. I think maybe the Pac-12 is already urging the NCAA to allow more practice time for football. And, of course, this extends to some of the other sports as well who have spring practices. But they can start, they can start putting the playbook onto the whiteboard and things like that. They can't get out on the field, obviously, and do run-throughs or anything. So the more you read and the more you see, you're hearing talk about June might be the first time things can happen. So we're just going to have to deal this year with an entirely new structure. And I think the NCAA, based on their ruling yesterday, is going to do a good job of being fluid and a little bit adaptable, and the bottom line being they want to try to service the student athletes and let them reach their personal goals. And so I just think we're going to be dealing with this for a while, and hopefully no one gets too out of joint and things work out in the coming years.
Yeah, we've always heard from guys and ties, it's all about the student athlete. That's our mission statement. Well, it's put up or shut up time on some of that, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is, and it's gonna manifest itself in so many different ways. We don't know them all yet. We're gonna hear stories about, well, I'm a senior and I wanted to come back, but they didn't have any scholarship money for me. Well, that person might have to transfer, or might have to decide to move on and take a job and start earning money. And then there's other factors. What is the job market going to look like in June and July? So, a lot of things to consider, but I think last night was a proper step for the NCAA.
Tom, you mentioned earlier in the interview how you think this is going to be an ongoing process that didn't just impact us moving forward for just 1 year, but years to come. How do you think it specifically impacts the University of Arkansas, which so many people love and dear, and especially the athletic department, in years to come?
Yeah, well, they were looking at having to make their fiscal year budget a little bit. They were going to have to probably tweak it down some because of the season tickets in football and, the revenue situation, because football has been bad. And now it just adds another layer. Now, Hunter Yurecek spoke at the press conference he had on that first Friday, the day that they decided to suspend all athletic activity until April the 15th. And talked about how, Arkansas would be able to absorb a good bit of the financial stuff that's coming their way. And but depending on how long this lasts and what it does to giving and everything, we already know that the NCAA is not going to be doling out near as much money per team because of the loss of the NCAA tournament. So they're just going to have to be really smart with how they set up things financially. And I think Arkansas is the type of school that will be able to handle, for instance, Courtney Dyfel, she wanted, I think, six seniors and would like to see them all come back. And I think they can find a way to make that happen. But this is going to be a year that in the books is going to look like a weird year compared to others around it. That's for sure.
What do you think the financial future is for schools like Arkansas, other SEC programs? Is it a V-curve that when it's opened up, it all bounces straight back to the level it was? Or do you think some people, because of the economy, because of the job market, as we listed, may not come back to the ticket trough? What do you think happens long-term here in college athletics?
Yeah, that's a great question. And Arkansas, obviously, in a very strong university and gets lots of giving, has plenty of very beneficent donors. And I think ultimately Arkansas will will turn out fine. But I do think there's going to be some budget freezes, some, you know, salary freezes. Then there may even be some budget cuts at universities across the spectrum. So everybody right now, I mean, it's almost like we've got to get through step A, B, and C before we look at what that does. And you know, I understand the chief financial officers are already crunching the numbers and already looking at all the different possibilities. But we've got to get through to the point where students can come back to campus, you know, where the athletic teams can meet again. So we're talking about a lot of steps that are going to be taken, many miles to walk before, you know, the final bottom line, you know, the red and the black numbers turn out for these athletic departments. But this year is going to be one that they're going to be talking about for a long time, because I do think, you know, there's going to be some lost revenues and some really tough decisions are going to have to be made. For instance, I think a lot of your small, your mid-majors and smaller schools, they won't be able to afford bringing in all those new freshmen and keeping all their seniors. So the ruling by the NCAA gives them some flexibility, and if some of those seniors are worthy of it, they can transfer out and look for playing time elsewhere. But I think it was smart that the NCAA did not grant the extra year to the winter sports athletes, because that would have just created – I mean, those sports, unfortunately for them, they lost their postseasons, but it would have created a huge financial crunch across the board in college athletics.
He is Tom Murphy of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. You can read his work every single week on Whole Hog Sports. Tom, appreciate the time, man, and as always, we'll talk on Thursday, dude.
You betcha, guys. Have a good week. See ya.
Absolutely. Tommy, we're brought to you this morning by Crabtree RV.
Yeah, exit 13 off of I-40 next door to the Cracker Barrel in Alma. That's where you'll find Crabtree RV. Their 70th anniversary sale continues right now. Even if it's a little bit wet and damp outside, their 26,000 square foot indoor showroom is there for you to browse and shop. You got all the social distancing, all the safety precautions are in place for you at Crabtree RV. First class parts and service department as well, that's on hand for you. Hey, get the jump on camping season. It's all at Crabtree RV in Alma, exit 13 off of I-40. Crabtree RV, it's where your family's dreams come true.
So Tom brought up finances during the majority of that interview, and I want to continue on with the conversation. We brought this up earlier. According to a study by USA Today, just granting seniors in spring sports an extra year of eligibility will cost Power 5 programs between $500,000 and $900,000. Giving athletes of all classifications an extra year would cost even more. That's from Andrew Hutchinson of Hog B. Brought that out. I mean, Tommy, this is a situation where the NCAA is already losing money with the cancellation of March Madness, which you were supposed to get over $600 million, and now the NCAA is just getting $225. This is just not... It's not a great prosperous time for college sports, pro sports, or sports in general right now.
No, correct. But this additional expense of scholarships, that's really like moving money from your left pocket to your right.
It's minimal compared to...
But who are you writing the check to? Who is the check going to for the athletic scholarships?
Student-athletes, right? But
where does the money end up flowing to? The university, right? So it's coming from the athletic department going to the academic side. So, I mean, it's like moving money from one pocket to another.
But you're still not getting it from, like, just the average Joe student.
But we're talking about the expense of $500,000 to $900,000 in these extra scholarships. In the end, all I'm saying is the university's writing a check to the university. So, I mean, it's not money that's leaving the university or changing hands or going out of state. It's as all the other scholarships. It's left pocket to right pocket.
Yes, but then you can all, like, if you look at it that way, then me and Jenkins, who didn't go to school, and you, who didn't go to school on an athletic scholarship, those students have to pay for school like North.
I'm just saying the money the athletic department is spending, they're spending with themselves. How much more does it really cost the university to do this? That's all I'm saying. The university, the athletic department, generally gives around $1 million a year to the athletic side or to the academic side. Maybe some of those things are reduced. They'll figure out a way to balance it. The least of their issues is funding these additional scholarships for seniors in spring sports.
Yeah, with Arkansas, it might not be as big of an impact, but some of those mid-majors that Tom was talking about and we brought up earlier in the show, it's going to be a lot more impactful moving forward. Like, Arkansas is not as big of an issue, but it's the smaller schools that are going to take a much bigger hit when it comes to stuff like
this. The problem Arkansas has is you've had a 5-year period with a downturn in football, and the last 2 years have been horrendous. as far as ticket sales, as far as donations. You're at a recent low. I mean, in relative, I mean, you can back it up in relative times. I mean, there's been other periods with smaller attendance, but I don't think you've ever seen anything in relative terms to what we've seen the last 2 years. So the timing of all of this, you didn't catch it at a time where I don't think the coffers are exactly lined full, you know. I think Arkansas will survive this fine as long as football season goes off somewhere close to what you were expecting.
That's
the big question that nobody has the answer to.
Yeah, and I know that you want football, I want football, and all our listeners want to see the Arkansas Razorbacks play this year, but that's kind of unfortunately in doubt right now.
You know, the problem the business model of the university has is most of the expenses are fixed cost. Coaches' salaries, the assistant coaches' salaries, the cost of the academic scholarships they give to the student athletes. There are some variable costs that they eliminate, the cost of travel and hotels and meals and some of those things that they're not, because they're not competing, they don't need. But the vast majority of the expenses the athletic department has are still there, whether you're playing games or not. So, and then when you're not playing games, you're not taking in income. Now, let's face it, for most of the spring sports, including baseball, which makes a little bit of money, but in comparison to the other sports, it's not a big breadwinner for the university. They may have saved some money. It's like in softball, you know, the offset between ticket sales and the variable cost of travel, they probably come out ahead on this deal by not playing all the games.
And Hunter Yurcheck mentioned that he talked about, yes, we're having to refund tickets, yes, we're going to have to refund certain money, but he also said the offset, as you mentioned, was the travel expenses, the stuff that they're not right. having to pay for because the sports are not going on. Because the only three profitable sports on campus, and this is not applicable to every college across the board, Arkansas baseball is like one of 20 schools in the NCAA that are profitable in D1, is football, basketball, and baseball. Title IX impacted that, where that's, you have to have every, it's every male sport for every female sport, correct? When I say that?
Scholarship wise.
Yeah.
With football being an exception to the calculation.
Yeah, and so you'll still have that, but majority of your sports on campus, they don't make money. So, like Tommy's saying, if they're not going on, you're not gonna, and I don't know the I can't tell you the finances based on the travel expenses, how much they do for per diems and all that stuff. But,
I mean, just the cost of ushers at your event, the cost of concession workers, and I know some of that's, you know, farmed out as far as other companies run it, but there's still a cost that somebody's incurring to make all that happen. Parking lot attendants, on and on, extra security, you know, all that gets paid for. You eliminated all those costs too. So in the end, there'll be some belt tightening because there'll have to be. But for some of these spring sports that aren't revenue makers anyway, and again, baseball has recently made in the hundreds of thousands, right around $1 million. It's not the moneymaker basketball or football is, obviously. You know, this isn't going to be a huge revenue loss with these spring sports not being played. This would be a much bigger deal if this outbreak had happened during football season. And that's the big fear, is if football season's put on the back burner, put on the shelf, whoo, now you're talking about a major revenue issue.
So you mentioned belt tightening. What do you mean by that? Like, go into detail. Are people
sure
going to get let go? Like,
well, I could see some staff people. I could see probably names you've never heard of. Not head coaches, not top assistant coaches. There will be some people that work within the athletic department in support roles that probably their positions may be put on hold or eliminated at some point. The university, just like anybody, I have read through some of this CARES Act. I believe, as far as the Payroll Protection Act part of it, which I've read through, spent a lot of time yesterday reading through some of the information that's been sent out to me by banks and other entities, I would imagine they would qualify for some of these SBA-type forgivable loans just like anyone else and be able to get a portion of their cost covered through this. You know, but everybody's scrambling to figure out how to make their bottom line right now. How to make things at least not be a disaster. The university can at least withstand some period of time without the income and with the expenses going on, but that isn't indefinite. You know, the university doesn't get to print money. So at the end of the day, the revenue stream has to come back on for this thing to function and operate anywhere close to what we're used to looking at. So I think some of the challenges, some of the cuts, some of the things that probably have already occurred in minor ways – are things and positions behind the scenes we never think of or hear about. But at some point, if this goes into football season, it may be become deeper cuts and more evident cuts.
Brad from Mountain Home texting, do you think if football does get played this fall, will have a even bigger impact since we've been without Hog Sports for so long? Absolutely, Brad. I've said this for quite some time. I know Ruskin has been on the front of that. Because you've had a lack of sports, the craving, the hunger for them are going to be an incredible level. It is going to be over the top when it comes to stuff like that.
If unemployment's somewhere around 5, 6, 7%, which is still way high than compared to what we're used to, if unemployment's 15 to 20%, people are not going to be able to afford to go.
Well, I don't think it's just about going to the games, but it's also watching the games too, Tommy, yeah, because it'll take...
You don't want to watch these games with a half-empty stadium. We've seen enough of that recently because of two-win seasons. So,
I still think the craving's going to be there regardless.
No, the craving, fine, but the energy, the passion, the atmosphere may not be.
At the games, specifically. At the games, yeah. No, I agree with you there, but as far as the intent to watch the games, yep, that's going to be there.
They even have games without crowds in them. That could be a possibility as well.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Try the new Bud Light Lemonade, a light and flavorful beer for those easy drinking occasions.
The crowd's into it. They just threw him out of the game. They just threw him out of the game. He's gotten his second technical, and he's been thrown out of the ball game.
So favorite Razorback, greatest Razorback, favorite Razorback team, and most underrated. These are going to be answers that are personal, that don't necessarily... have like this is it's not going to be this is the right answer this is the right answer this is the right answer so your favorite Razorback of all time, Tommy, I'll let you go, the Jenkins, you go, and then I'll go. Who is that? Be football, basketball, baseball, there's no limit to the sport that you pick.
Favorite player to ever watch, I'll separate this because you could use these, could be interchangeable, my two answers. Matt Jones, he was, you never knew what was going to happen when the ball got in his hands. He wasn't the greatest football player ever, but he was, to me, maybe as entertaining to watch. And I was watching a highlight yesterday of him making a dunk in basketball. We forget about, I think it was the Auburn game from 2004 or whatever it was. In basketball. Anyway, point being, you never knew what was coming next, regardless of sport, when Matt Jones got the ball in his hand. So he's probably one of my favorite Razorbacks of all time just because he was so exciting to play, to see play.
Yeah, Matt's a good guy. I've gotten a chance to talk to him a few times. He's been in studio, done a show with me when Phil was absent one day, and played a little water volleyball with him as well. Just a cool dude. And it was funny because we were going over old memories, and he's not one to brag about his talents, his accuracies and stuff. In fact, he's very humble. If you actually talked about it, he gets a little shy when you ask him about former football plays. But I remember not one of his great plays, but one of the things that still irritates him to this day is the Texas fumble 2004. Oh, yeah. When they're driving.
It irritated me a lot at the time.
Now, were they down, was it 2-3? I mean, it was close. I can't remember the exact score.
It was the difference in the game. I don't remember the exact score.
And Arkansas was driving, and a guy came from behind and popped it out of Matt's hands and ended up, and they still got a chance to come back, and Matt just kind of had a desperation heave at the end. And then, but of all the things we talked about, of all his great accolades, of all his great moments in a Razorback uniform, that stood out to me the most, that he is still to this day angry about that 2004 loss at home to Texas.
Yeah.
Because that was Vince Young, and that was the year before they went to national championship. Or was that the national? Because they won it in 2005, but I always get mixed up if it's the 2005 season. So that would have been the year before they won the national championship, but they had, I think Cedric Benson was the running back. Texas had some studs that year. Yeah, they were top 10 in the country.
Athletes always remember the losses ahead of the wins.
Which I think is cool, and that stands out. So, Jenkins, your favorite Razorback of all time?
Probably Matt Jones. But I was a little kid watching him, and my first Razorback game was when he dunked it on the goalpost against Ole Miss.
Senior day, yeah.
Most recently, though, probably, kind of like you, I enjoyed watching Ryan Mallett play, just slinging the football just all across the field. It'd probably be a toss-up between him or Ryan Mallett. I really enjoyed watching Michael Qualls, too, kind of for the same reason.
Yeah.
You never knew what Matt Jones is going to do. You never knew how many SportsCenter highlights Michael Qualls is going to be on.
Yeah, that's a good one. But it just seemed like there was nothing Matt Jones couldn't do. You know? That's what it seemed like.
Yeah, and I think with Matt Jones, he was just so good. You never saw anything like it. 6'6", 6'7", ran a 4.3 40, ended up transitioning to wide receiver in the NFL, could just get after it. And it was
sneaky
so
fast.
It was so fun to watch him on a daily basis, or excuse me, on a weekly basis. And I miss watching him play. You think about some of the greatest highlights in Arkansas history, Tommy, a lot of those involve Matt Jones.
Yep. So. And he just I don't want to say he changed the game, but what he did with the football, just it made defenses play Arkansas different during that time. I just hate the fact that maybe if he'd have played some wide receiver in college, maybe his NFL career would have been more prolonged or more meaningful, had more impact. But he was a hell of a player at Arkansas.
And I always wish that him and Darren would have overlapped at least 1 year. And I asked him about that. I was like, man, don't you wish you could have just played with Darren 1 year? Darren and Felix, just 1 year. And that would have been something that you definitely would have loved to see. 877-377-6963. Carl's in Lavaca. Carl, what is your favorite Razorback of all time? Who's the greatest Razorback of all time? Who's your favorite team? And who's the most underrated, man?
Ask another question, why don't you?
That's just the four.
Good Lord.
Yeah, well, all right, so my favorite, like you were talking about, is Matt Jones. I know there's an argument for Ryan Mallett and guys like that. Matt Jones was so athletic at the quarterback position that he was a first-round draft pick. I believe first-round draft pick at wide receiver in the NFL after running a 4.38.
He was.
Which was the record at the 40 for a long time until it was broken by Robert Griffin III. And also, I feel like the reason why a lot of running quarterbacks now, like Lamar Jackson, guys like that, are asked if they want to make a transition to wide receiver in the NFL, that precedent was kind of set by Matt Jones because of how athletic he was. Greatest Razorback of all time, I'd say Corliss Williamson or D-Mac. I also just kind of threw this list together in about 30 seconds. So
that's okay.
But D-Mac, I mean, there's nothing less to say. He got robbed of at least one Heisman, I know. Corliss, I mean, he was mentioned on ESPN First Take yesterday with Stephen A. Smith about Grant Hill suffered one national championship loss in his career at Duke, and it was to Corliss and those boys.
Corliss, as Stephen A. said.
Corliss. Right. Favorite Razorback team has got to be, what year did the Razorbacks go to the Sugar Bowl with Bobby Petrino? 2010, yeah, I just miss walking into SEC games knowing that we're going to beat the crap out of people. I haven't had that feeling in a while, really, against anybody. I can't take anybody for granted nowadays. My most underrated Razorback, because I was kind of torn between these two, Martrell Spate and Peyton Hillis. I know Peyton Hillis is probably a much bigger name than Spate, just because Spate kind of had that one solid year. But Spate's tackle record, I don't think will be broken in a long time. I mean, Scooter Harris has been up there in tackles, and he hadn't even come close. And Peyton Hillis, I mean, last white prominent running back in the NFL, and went on the cover of Madden. So, feel like he definitely had some big games at Arkansas, but definitely flew under the radar, being in the shadows of D-Mac and Felix. So that's my four. I know it was a lot. So,
Carl, appreciate the call, yeah, man. Those are good lists, and I think with you mentioned there's a couple of different people. One, Spate, you're exactly right. There was a sequence in the LSU game, Tommy, in 2014, where he read the play three straight times.
Yep.
First, second, third down, he knew exactly where the ball was going three straight times. And that defense, you think about the defense that held Amari Cooper to, like, what, 21 reception yards? Mm-hmm. The defense that held LSU to a shutout, Ole Miss to a shutout. I know Bo Wallace wasn't 100% fully healthy for that game, but that defense was one of the lone bright spots of that 2014 football team.
Yeah, it's Spate who, the way the defense was set up, kind of rolled the plays to the outside linebacker spot. He took advantage of it with all those tackles. He had good defensive linemen to kind of stop things up front.
Bylon Flowers and company.
And, God, why am I drawing a blank on this guy's name? In the secondary, went to Washington, drafted by Washington.
Rowan Gaines, DJ Dean.
Oh. Anyway, the
Jared Tolliver, or
the point
Collins.
Is you had a pro at every level on that defense, and Spate really stood up there.
I'm trying to think what secondary player you're talking about. Nothing's coming to mind as of late. But that was those were good lists from Carl and Lavaca. So you mentioned your favorite Razorback. Mine it comes down between Darren McFadden and Bobby Portis, both Little Rock guys. I know Bobby's postseason success is not as much as Darren McFadden's was, but I mean, you think about those two guys being Arkansas guys, all, and I think what stands out to me with them is there was no way a coach, whether it was Cal for Bobby or Saban for Darren, I mean, Saban was, in the NFL at the time, but you just weren't going to get those kids to leave Arkansas. They were 100% going to be Razorbacks from basically their childhoods. And that, maybe that's not as important to some of you listening right now, but I put that in the, I add that, that's like an almost an extra, like when you're weighing the pros and cons on this list, that adds to me 100%. Now, I didn't get to see Dan Hampton. I didn't get to see Billy Ray Smith. I've seen highlights of Steve Atwater and highlights of those guys, Joe Ferguson. But until, it's hard for me to say this is my favorite Razorback of all time when I didn't get to see them live. But
you got to have that connection.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm putting, like, I can't gloss over what those guys did. You can't do that. So, as far as the greatest Razorback of all time goes, it's a little different from your favorite. Tommy, who do you think the greatest Razorback of all time is?
I think the easy ones to turn to are Corliss and D-Mac. I mean, those are the greatest Razorbacks, and you probably got to give the nod to Corliss Williamson because of the natty. So I'm going to go Corliss Williamson, the greatest Razorback of all time.
And almost a second one, too, that we have to, that we always
should have been to.
Think about.
Then there wouldn't even, this wouldn't even be a discussion.
What about you, Jenkins? Who do you think the greatest Razorback of all time is?
Corliss. It almost has to be, just kind of like Tommy said, he has an Eddie. I think if McFadden got a Heisman or had some other postseason success, you could throw Darren McFadden in there. But to me, it's Corliss.
So I'm going to throw a wrench in this. Y'all have both said Corliss. I'm going to say Frank, because while he wasn't a player at the University of Arkansas, you think about all that he did for the Razorbacks. And I saw all these answers, and I didn't see Broyles at a single answer in this conversation with the social media stuff. So I'm going to say Frank Broyles because of everything that he did for the University of Arkansas, not only off the field, but on the field as well.
No, there's no question. If you're going to pick one person, regardless of on the field or off the field, it's him. And that, there isn't the University of Arkansas as we know it today. The Razorbacks aren't a national brand as we know it today. You're not in the SEC. I mean, you just keep going down the list of things that happened because of his leadership. No, I mean, that is the answer if we're talking about if we include someone off the field.
Yeah, and you mentioned this last week, Tommy, the fact that it was just such great forward thinking from Frank that he put Baum Walker Stadium out kind of not in the pastures per se, but in a business district that was not like at all like that was not like heavily occupied with businesses or anything like that. And so I thought, there's just so many things he did over the course of his career that were vital for the success of not only the Arkansas football program, but the athletic department in general.
Sometimes you go where the land is available and cheap. You know, the best ability is availability. And that land was available, and everything kind of has grown towards that off the campus. But there just wasn't room on campus to put it where you wanted it. And I don't think even Frank could have foresaw the kind of revenue that Baum Stadium eventually would be responsible for bringing in.
Correct. Because baseball, as you mentioned, was an afterthought of Arkansas athletics at the time at George Coalfield.
When they built that thing originally, I mean, it was 1985 before they had lights on George Coalfield. They had to play doubleheaders during the day just to get it in. And then when they moved the ballpark down the road to what is now Baum Walker Stadium, the seats originally just went to about the bases or so. Mm-hmm. There was grass berms down the rest of the what is now seating all the way out to the foul poles. And there wasn't a hog pen as we knew it. It was there, but it wasn't what we know now.
Yeah.
And the suites, they were like the press box and then Van Horn's office on one side and one or two suites. And then they eventually expanded that out to about the bases. And then they ultimately expanded it all the way down to the ends, but where it is now. But you know, they didn't have all these suites. So what that stadium has become, I'll tell you what else he had, the vision for how to build a stadium that could be expandable, how to grow with it. And that was part of the design that was just genius by him.
Alan Fort Smith, this is back to his favorite Razorback. He is a big Quinn Grovey guy. I mean, you think about the duel he had with Andre Ware when they beat Houston, who eventually went on to win the Heisman Trophy. That was quite impressive. Wade from Branch says, Sidney Moncrief, because he was so underrated to Larry Bird and Magic Johnson. If you remember, Sidney actually beat Larry, and I'm forgetting the season. I think it was 83. They beat them in the, I believe, Eastern Conference Finals, and Philly won the ship that year in the NBA Finals. But I believe it was 83 that Sidney Moncrief beat as a Milwaukee Bucks member the Boston Celtics. And such a great two-way player. The fact that he was so versatile and such a good offensive player as well as a defensive player. All right, moving on. Favorite Razorback team. Again, this is personal and one that meant the most to you. I know some of our listeners are old enough to watch and remember the 64 team. Some of our listeners, a lot of our listeners are going to say the 94 team. To me, though, since I wasn't born for either of those, and I think it was 2002, I was a little young. I was like six watching that, if I remember that correctly. And I was there for Miracle on Markham. That was wonderful. But for me, the age that I can remember the most and still being a kid where it means that much more to you is 2006 when they got to the SEC Championship and lost to Tim Tebow, Chris Leak, and the Florida Gators. Even everything that was going on that season was just so magical to watch in a kid at the time, especially in middle school.
All right, you took my answer. So let me go 2010 Razorback football team.
That's hard to beat, too.
Set off a lot of excitement and probably had a better finish because you got to a BCS game, went to the Sugar Bowl. It would have been better if you'd have won it. But, you know, in 06, they lost in the Cap 1 Bowl to Wisconsin that year, too. So, in fact, McFadden didn't win a bowl game in 06 or 07.
You stole both of mine. I'll go 2011, the year we went the 11-win season. Mainly just because me and my parents, at every afternoon when they did the BCS poll, the polls on Tuesdays, we booked out our whole evening just to see where we'd get. Just that year was, I remember that like
I remember
it was
on Sunday nights you'd sit there and watch it.
Or Sunday nights, excuse me.
Yeah, Sunday nights, it was appointment TV.
So Karin Lavaca brought up how it was fun in 2010, knowing you were heading into a stadium outside of the LSU and Alabama game, knowing that you were probably going to win the football game. And how I paralleled that to is Blaine Knight a couple years back on Friday night. You just knew that Arkansas was going to win. Undefeated that season. You were just so positive, regardless of the talent of the team that was walking in or that you were playing on the road. B-Knight's got this. This game's over. And it typically was. That's why he finished undefeated. All right, last one. Most underrated Razorback of all time. Got about a minute left.
Probably the correct answer is Marvin Delph, because how many points would he have scored had there been a three-point line back then? So Delph would be a good answer, but I'm going to go a little closer to home for me and say Barry Lunny. Undersized guy, left-hander at quarterback, could play any sport, could do anything. Took that 95 team to the SEC title game. They lost to Florida there. Got the shaft, ended up in the Carquest Bowl, played North Carolina and lost. But I thought the time from him, he started as a freshman against Tennessee, you know, through, I guess, the 95 season, him and Madre Hill. I thought Barry Lunny was outstanding on some teams that weren't very good around him.
I don't know if you would consider him underrated, but I would maybe throw in Andrew Benintendi. Because if we're going to talk greatest of all, I mean, he's got the accolades to prove it, but you don't really mention him very often.
That's a good point.
Mine's Dennis Johnson. I loved watching him play.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Bud Light Seltzer. 5% ABV and only 100 calories. We'd put it up against any other seltzer out there.